You're listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely.
Hey there, I'm Aaron, and welcome to this week's episode of Reading Writers. Today, I am sharing another best of moment from the first season of the podcast, this time a conversation with Jared Wilson on his experience and takeaways reading Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me. So as you listen, I hope you find this conversation really helpful as you consider how we can become more thoughtfully engaged in real conversations about cultural issues that surround us as we seek to understand the experiences that other people have based on their ethnicities.
So that's kind of important. Now, can you tell me a little bit more about his book that you read?
Yeah.
And what was it that grabbed you?
Yeah. It's a letter. It's an extended letter to his son, right? Okay. So it's basically about the Black experience. And, you know, as a white person, I don't know what that's like. You know, we hear a lot about white privilege and that sort of thing today. That phrase keeps, getting thrown out. Of course, there's a lot of white folks who would say, I'm not privileged. I've had to work for everything I get and that sort of thing, which is not what it means. White privilege doesn't mean that white people don't have to work for the thing, you know, for things, you know, put food on the table or what have you. But there's just a lot of assumptions. There's things like, you know, right now we're looking at what's going on in the news and what's really something that I've been thinking about a lot is, so yesterday, two instances of, you know, hitting the news of young Black men being, you know, killed by cops, one in a parking lot, one during a traffic stop. Yesterday morning, I was pulled over on my way to work. And so before I saw any of this news, you know, everything went fine, mm-hmm. as I expected that it would. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't happy to be pulled over. You know, I drove away perfectly fine after that experience. And that is because the police officer was a very professional guy. I mean, he wasn't, you know, quote unquote, nice. He wasn't friendly with me or anything, right. But he was antagonistic or what have you. He was very, like, by the book, matter of fact, you know, here's your ticket, get out, that sort of thing. I drove away because he was like that, because he was self-controlled and professional. But I didn't worry about him not being like that, because my experience is that that's how police officers treat me. Mm-hmm. And I have to, you know, somehow accommodate the fact that for most, maybe not all, but for most of my friends of color, they have a completely different experience. Even if they drive away fine after a traffic stop, you know, they're still alive, right? Yeah. The amount of anxiety they have, the amount of fear that they have, that comes from somewhere, and it's not completely irrational. It comes from an experience. Yeah. And so reading this book by Ta-Nehisi Coates, him extended a letter to his son, it has some history there, kind of what it was like for him growing up in his neighborhood, what it was like the first time he had a gun pulled on it. Like, you know, it was very rare for, you know, white guys who grew up in the suburbs to have that kind of experience, mm-hmm. where it becomes a normal part of your existence to fear for your life, where every day you think, this could be the day that I die.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true for any of us, just because anything can happen.
Sure.
But for, you know, Black men, especially growing up in where most Black men grow up, and just the Black experience, it's such a ever-present concern. And so reading the book for me was sort of like wanting to be a good listener. Mm-hmm. I didn't think, like, walking away, I read this and now all of a sudden I'm going to be some, you know, sort of enlightened white person now.
Yeah.
to yeah. be, you know, about... beside the point, or speaks to even more privilege that we would even think of ourselves that way. But I wanted to be a good listener. Mm-hmm. And this book that, you know, I think it won the National Book Award or Pulitzer or something. You know, I don't know. It's an award-winning book,
yeah,
influential book. And I read it on an airplane and it really opened my eyes. I think it's made me a better listener to my friends and opened myself up more to their experience. Not that I can share their experience, but that I could share some level of empathy, mm-hmm. or concern, consideration, that we don't all experience the world in the same way, you know, that to be colorblind is not really an option. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the option of the privileged to, you know, colorblind, I guess. But it's a good book. I recommend it to all white people. They should all read it.
Yep. Well, I'll be adding it to my list for sure. I mean, yeah, that sounds pretty, well, it sounds pretty heavy, but I mean,
have those conversations with our kids.
Yeah.
That young Black men have to have the talk, you know, an extra the talk.
Yeah.
about how you act when someone pulls you over or what have you. I remember my dad. So my dad is biracial. His mom is from Mexico. Mm-hmm. Grew up in the border, in border town in the Rio Grande Valley. I was born in Brownsville, Texas, grew up in Brownsville. I was a minority at most of the schools that I went to. You know, white kids were the minority. But even I look at that and go, there was never any question in my mind that, I mean, you know, I was bullied in some instances, that sort of thing. But I obviously was an experiencer of white privilege. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to worry about not being able to eat when I got home. I didn't have to worry about, you know, not being able to get into good college or, you know, things like that. So even as a minority, there still is the experience of white privilege. But I remember my dad telling me, and at the time, I didn't think anything of it. I just thought it was just the kind of thing, you know, he's just, you know, teaching me. But it was about when you get pulled over.
Yeah.
I remember him saying, always say yes, sir, or no, sir. Always do whatever they tell you. I remember my dad, you know, saying to me, whatever they tell you to do, you do it. They say, get out of the car, you get out of the car. They say, you know, put your hands here, you put your hands there. Whatever they say, you do it. You know, always keep your hands visible, that sort of thing. And at the time, I'm just thinking, this is what you do. I look back and think, you know, this might have been my dad growing up, you know, in a racially mixed area as a biracial kid. I mean, I remember hearing stories about my grandparents' dog not liking him because my grandparents' dog didn't like Mexicans.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know if that's actually like accurate, like how the dog, you know, was the dog a racist? I don't know. I mean, my grandparents obviously let my mom date my dad, so there wasn't a concern there. Yeah. As far as I'm aware of, but you know, it's not as racially a toxic environment as, you know, South Central Los Angeles would be, or, you know, that sort of thing. But there's just like those elements that were, but I don't know what that's like. I don't know what it's like. You know, I don't have a son, but if I had a son, I wouldn't have to have a conversation on the same level as black men have to do with their sons about how you act when someone pulls you over. And because we can't even say anymore that it's always about resisting arrest or what have you. It's dangerous. It's dangerous to be a black man.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what this book is about as well, because he talks about the black body. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous to have a black body because it's been commoditized. It's been abused. It's been, you know, violence perpetrated against the black body. Mm-hmm. That's good. It's just good to kind of open my mind to a different experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not even around the world. I mean,
it's just right there. So
North America.
Thanks for listening to this week's Best Of episode of Reading Writers. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you did, please consider leaving a rating and review on iTunes because your feedback helps people find the show. Also, look for the premiere of Season 2 of Reading Writers in mid-March 2017. I'm really looking forward to this new season and how it might challenge us to read more widely and consider how reading helps us as creators and as disciple makers. Thanks for listening.